Hey guys, Jordan here. Today's very special Thanksgiving episode of Thank God for Bitcoin is going to be a special crossover episode of the Thank God for Nostr podcast. Now, there may be some of you who are listening to this and you're thinking, what is Nostr? Or maybe you know what Nostr is and you're like, I don't really care. I think this episode is going to be more interesting than you might expect. And there's obviously a ton of crossover between the two worlds. But in this episode, we get into just what is communication and speech. Why does it exist? Why does communication exist? We talk about the fact that words created the world and have creative and propulsive power in all kinds of ways. And then we talk about the Christian's role in stewarding those tools and basically what did God put us here to do? We get into a bunch of all these things that I think will be interesting to our normal Thank God for Bitcoin audience. I just got back from spending a bunch of time at two different events that will be interesting to this audience. One of them was the Nostrville conference in Nashville, Tennessee. I was up there for a few days, and then I spent about a week in El Salvador, Bitcoin Beach, Bitcoin Country. This is my first trip there, and had a bunch of really good conversations and some really cool things that are coming down the pike that we're going to get to announce. About the intersection of global missions and Bitcoin. And so we will have news on that very soon, probably next week or the week after. Thank you guys, and hope you guys have a great Thanksgiving.
You're listening to the Thank God for Nostr podcast.
Welcome to the Thank God for Nostr podcast. My name is Jordan Bush. I'm the head of content and education at Thank God for Bitcoin.
I'm John. I also known as HODLBOD. I'm the developer of the Coracle Nostr client.
And we are excited to have you guys with us. Again, this podcast is designed to talk about Nostr, all things Nostr, what it is, why it matters, why you should care, why Christians in general should care. Again, these are seemingly strange ideas and concepts, and so we want to dispel with the idea that they're strange. They actually aren't very strange. So, John, the first thing I want to talk about, again, is episode one of a Nostr podcast. Is it pronounced Nostr or Nostr? What are your opinions on this? You're a core dev of Nostr?
Yeah, I'm strongly in the Nostr camp, but I think Nostr is slowly winning. It's kind of like a homeschool thing, except in this case, everyone's homeschooled and doesn't know how to pronounce the word.
It's both. I'm in the Nostr camp, so we are a podcast divided on this point.
Well, dueling pronunciations.
So you guys can decide and vote with your listens or something. I don't know how you're.
Yeah, that's really the main goal of this whole thing. Yeah.
Okay, so John, one of the things that we're going to be doing with every podcast is we're going to start out with a passage of scripture. So why don't you unpack our scripture for today?
Yeah, so today we chose John 1:1 just because we're talking about communication and words, and what better place to start than there. So, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him nothing was made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not comprehend it.
That is such a wild passage. It's just so interesting. You have, in the beginning was the Word, and then the Word starts being talked about as a person, which is just really interesting. I don't know if you want to add anything to that, John. What are you thinking on this front, man?
Logos is the Greek word for word, and in most translations, it's capitalized, not that it was in the original Greek, but this word is synonymous with Jesus, and this is we'll get into it later, but this is the word that created the world. These are words of power, and all words are words of power, and so we should care about communication. So that's the thought behind choosing this verse.
Yeah, and I think it's a perfect segue into why we should care about Nostr and the relevant issues, because words are powerful. Words are animating forces. I think, again, it's incredible to think about this idea even outside of, even obviously this verse existed for thousands of years before computer programming existed, but we live in a world where you can use words to create pictures. You can use words to create all these kind of different things. And so, yeah, I really do think this, that that's a very interesting verse to think about in the light of Noster. But John, why don't you give the audience an intro to what Noster is? Like, if somebody, what is it? I'm sure there's a lot of people who've heard it. They've been maybe kicking around on Twitter. They may have, man, the brave souls may have even created a Noster key set. But kind of what is Noster? If you had explained it to somebody who knew nothing about it, what would you say Noster is?
Yeah, I'll try to keep it not too technical because I start dropping jargon super fast. But there's three definitions that I found most useful and understandable to people. First, it's decentralized Twitter, right? So Twitter's been censoring. Everyone's uncomfortable with that. It's supposed to be a platform for journalists, but you can't do journalism if you're not free to speak. So that's explanation number one, is it's a way to avoid censorship on journalistic social media platforms. But really, like, that's the least important definition. The more important one is, I think it's like email, right? So it's, and I guess the second and third ones I had in mind are just one definition, but email is a decentralized protocol where you have multiple programs that agree to talk to each other in a certain way. So like, I can send an email from my ProtonMail account to someone's Gmail account and vice versa. It's not like a single database that one company runs. It's this open thing. And so like with email, it's like fine. It works for what it is, well, but that's where it ends. Noster is another way to put it, and this is what I was thinking for that third definition, is an interoperability layer for social media, right? So right now, if you post on Facebook, it just goes to Facebook. If you post on Craigslist, it's just on Craigslist. You have all these silos of data, and they're all separate, and they're all owned and controlled and monetized by the business that holds that data. Noster is an open way to publish your kind of like public social media data. And the nice thing about that, we'll get into this later, is that it creates a much stronger network effect than these walled gardens. And it also weakens the ability for companies to steer the conversation and monetize people's attention. Puts the responsibility and the value of that social communication back in the hands of the user. In a practical sense, like if you've ever used Facebook or Craigslist, Google Maps, Substack, email, your experience has been subpar. That's just like where we are today. So Noster is a model that...
When you say it's been subpar, like subpar in what way? Because I'm sure there's people who are like, hey, I mean, those services work great for me. In what way are they subpar?
Yeah, another great example I like to use is if you go on like Google Maps and look for a good restaurant, right? All these restaurants have reviews, and they've got a rating that kind of compresses all those reviews into just one number. So you can see at a glance, is this a good or bad restaurant? And that's really helpful. Mm. But what if you just wanted to know what your group of people, your friends, think about a given thing? Like, it's relevant for restaurants, but it's more relevant for other more culturally relevant topics. So if I could say, just show me all the reviews from my social network, aka my friends and my friends of friends. Now, those reviews instantly take on a much higher level of credibility. And so you can trust that. So it's this like this layer across the internet where it allows you to ask your friends what they think of basically anything. And that's just like one part of it. Reviews is just like a slice of what Noster is. There's all kinds of other good stuff in there. But we probably took that a little too far.
No, you're good. What about, you're talking about layers of interoperability. Like, what does that mean? What's an example of something, like obviously the tailored reviews is one thing, but I guess one of the things that I noticed with, as you mentioned, if you have Google, Facebook, all of these things, you have to create individual accounts with each one of these companies. Is that something, how does that relate to Noster?
Yeah, so in Noster, you have one identity, and it's based on public and private keys, which is a techie concept, so we'll gloss over that. But you basically have a username and a password, and that allows you to authenticate by saying, I can prove that I said this thing. So you don't need these platforms to vouch for you on your behalf. They don't have to say, yeah, we checked and it came from this user, and so we'll attach that user's metadata to it. It's just like, I said this thing, and that's a self-authenticating message. And so no matter who gives you this message, whoever receives it can basically say, oh yeah, I know that was John that said that. And so the effect of that right. is that you don't need these services to intermediate literally everything for you.
Okay. And so like, how does that, who is the un, yeah. How do you initially do this? I think a lot of people, when they started a Nostr account, they started and they announce it on a platform where they already have a following or they're already a known commodity. And so that is like the bridge to the Nostr world, which has these, yeah, where it is self-verified. What is your, like, how does that work?
Yeah, so all social credibility comes from outside the system. That's true of Twitter, and that's true of Nostr too. Sure. You have to have already created some content. You have to already have some friendships in order to matter on Nostr, because otherwise you're indistinguishable from a bot. It's not a problem that's unique to Nostr. It's just more visible with Nostr right now because we're bootstrapping and there's no one there. We're just getting those social networks up off the ground. But at this point, I have more followers by a factor of 20 on Nostr than I do on Twitter. And so my reputation is way more valid on Nostr than on Twitter. On Twitter, I'm no one. I've just had an account for 10 years. On Nostr, a lot of people actually follow me. It's the same as any other platform or reputation kind of system.
Sure. Yeah. So it goes in and you have an initial bridge. I think what a lot of people do when they create a Nostr account, which we'll talk about that process later, but then when they create a Nostr account, they share their Nostr account information on one of their existing profile or their existing Twitter account or Facebook account or whatever it would be.
Yeah.
So it's just.
Or to scan it with a QR code in person. Yeah. I was just going to say, like, right now, the best way to do it is just to do it in person. You just open up your app and then have someone scan it and load it up in their Nostr app. And there you go. Like, you're authenticated because there you are in person. So, you know, Nostr,
sure.
A lot of people think of the internet and cyberspace as a substitute for reality. And my goal is to augment reality, not in a way that like takes you away from your people, but in a way that complements your real life social relationships.
Yeah. And so you can verify, like you can, in that case, if you're meeting someone physically, you can physically verify that this person is who they say they are. That, again, this isn't a bot. This isn't something along those lines, which in a day of AI and all these things where you can't really, it's tough to be sure if somebody is who they say they are. Let's do this. I think one of the things that we wanted to talk about, again, when we first met, we started talking about a bunch of different topics. We had similar theological background. A lot of the same, been reading and listening to, informed by a lot of the same people. We began talking about Nostr and Bitcoin and a bunch of these other technologies, again, from as first principles a basis as possible. And so one of the things that I want to dig down deep in is just asking, why should people care about Nostr? What does Nostr have to do with Christianity? What does it have to do? Like, where's the overlap happen there? Because this seems to be I would initially think about something like a technology is a tool that's amoral. It's not connected to morality. How would you push back against that idea, or would you push back against that idea? Why does Nostr matter?
Yeah, I had a super hard time answering that question for myself. So you just got to go, you broaden your scope over and over until you finally have enough context to be able to answer that question. Because like, when I think about Nostr, I think about government censorship or whatever. And that's such a narrow thing with so many assumptions in it. Just backing all the way up, what is our role in this world as Christians? We're supposed to be in this world, but not of it. And the Bible constantly talks about these different roles of king and priest and prophet. And Jesus is like the main one, right? Mm-hmm. But he also makes us all kings and priests to God. And so we have this like active role. We have this delegated responsibility that God has given us, both as humans, as non-Christians, but also as Christians. And whether it's about Nostr or something else, as technology progresses, I don't think we're really allowed as Christians to just opt out and kind of check out and say, Jesus, you take the wheel and I'm going to be over here waiting for heaven to happen after I die or you rapture me away or something like that. God wants us to be engaged with the world. It's the glory of a king to find out a matter, and it's the glory of God to conceal a matter. So yep. we have this conversation, we have this tension with God, and technology is just one of those areas in which we actually basically talk to and listen to God.
Yeah, I think one of the things we talked about that was most interesting to me in this area is that one of the things that God, we could literally just start this podcast by just going through like Genesis 1 and 2 and just talking about what God told humanity to do. And just like talking about how part of what it means to be human is to hear the voice of God and obey that voice. This is very definitional in terms of what it is to be human. And part of that thing that God has told us to do is to subdue the earth, to subdue and exercise dominion, which means to rule over the earth. And so it's basically to conform the world to the will of its creator. And that's in the case of God, God is the creator of the earth and the raw materials of the earth and then us as well. And so his will is not this foreign thing, this alien thing that we're trying to, it's not a square peg in a round hole that we're trying to like force in there. It's actually it's a square peg and square peg in a square hole, but it requires someone to actually do the work. And so I think this is a helpful framework through which to think about technology and any other tools is just how well does this thing, does this tool help me to do the things that God has called me to do? So I think, why don't you just try to unpack for us, like what are some ways in which social media, which Noster, that's one of the, it's probably the biggest use case at this point is decentralized social media. Like what function, what role does social media serve in people's lives? Or at least what role should it serve?
Yeah, before I get to that, I want to add something to what you were saying. Our job is to conform ourselves to the image of God and to subdue the earth to God's will. And that sounds very authoritarian. And I know that a lot of people in our milieu are very anti-authoritarian, much more on the libertarian anarchist side of things politically. And so I just want to make it clear that like the Christian project is not fiat. Right? God is the only one who can do fiat. Fiat just means let it be. So God spoke and it was the world and he said it's good. So God likes the world that he created. And so as Christians, we have to like that too. We can't impose arbitrary standards on the world. That's not what it means to subdue the earth. It means to husband the earth. If you take care of animals like pigs or chickens or something like that, you're not out there at 6 a.m. kicking them. You're out there every morning, like feeding your chickens and making sure that they've got shelter and just taking care of them, changing all their, mucking out the stalls and all that stuff. So that's what Christians mean by subduing the earth. And that means some really specific things that not everyone is going to agree with. But I just want to make that clear because it might be a question in a lot of people's minds.
I think that's a great point of clarification. Yeah. Okay. So I think we would both agree that subduing is relates to the characteristics that make up individual things. So in the case of your chickens or whatever, you're not trying to make them into dogs or something. Like you're trying to figure out, hey, here is this thing, here is this chicken that produces eggs. So how do I steward this thing and help it to be in the best possible situation to do what it does best? How can I serve it so that I can be served by it? That can even sound utilitarian, but I think again,
it's love.
Not,
I mean,
just,
that's love.
It's not
love
just utilitarianism. Yeah.
Yeah. You love your chickens and they're not capable of really loving you back. But you know, the reciprocity you get in creation is just all things working together for the glory of God. That's what that is. I was reading 1 Corinthians with my family this morning and 1 Corinthians 1, and it talks about the Jews seek power, the Greeks seek wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified. And that begets a better power and a better wisdom too, it says. So what is that power and wisdom? It's the weakness of God and the foolishness of God in sending Jesus to die. And what is the thing that characterizes God's version of wisdom and power? It's love. God loved the world and he sent his son. Love is something that is revealed in Jesus. That's what real love is. And everything else we do, whether it's power, exercising power, or exercising wisdom, it has to be characterized by love primarily.
Yeah. Agreed. And so this is something that, again, part of being human is to be a steward. This is a principle that is just all over the place. Like God, he talks about the fact that God has, like, we are created things. We are separate from the rest of creation. God created us to hold a unique position within his creation. And part of that is stewarding things. And so it's, again, it's the same idea of the healthy, well-defined idea of subduing. It's basically taking things, figuring out what they are, and then using them in ways that correspond with their nature and correspond with God's will. So I think before, as we talk about what godly social media looks like, we can just talk about the idea of what does it look like to, given that those are just platforms for speech, I think that this is something we can talk about is why does speech exist? We're called to steward speech. I think, John, what is speech? Why does speech exist?
Yeah, I think primarily it exists because it's in the character of God, right? Everything good comes from God. But in a less abstract way, I think speech is intended for that process of stewardship and love. Speech is for expressing yourself, building up ideas, and connecting with other people. Like Facebook is all about connecting with other people, but it ends up distancing them. We have with the current social media landscape is speech that is extractive and addictive, and real speech, truth and love, right? We're supposed to speak the truth and love to one another. The kind of speech that God loves is stuff that builds one another up rather than tearing each other down. And what we currently have is so much speech that is intended to destroy people. And it might be done on purpose in a lot of cases, but more often it's just done for profit, right? The social media companies, and not just them, but newspapers and like TV stations, their incentive is to make money. And while there's nothing wrong with money in itself, when you put your profit above your mission and you manipulate and abuse a tool that's intended for the flourishing of people, you adapt that to padding your bottom line. When monopolies are a big problem because it removes the accountability for people that do this work of communication, which is exactly what we're doing right now, right?
Yeah.
We're doing a podcast. We're doing the work of communication. But when you remove the accountability from the equation, that mission drops off as well. What we have is teenage girls on Instagram who are just like all wrapped up around self-image and the image of other people. There's so much envy. You've got pornography rampant on the internet. That's the sin of lust. You have marketing and advertising all over the place. Everything is monetized and productized. There's the sin of covetousness. You got the sin of pride. You just got all the different sins institutionalized for the profit of big companies. And that's not to say that users aren't culpable for that too. Whomst among us hasn't tried to dunk on someone else on Twitter? But the way things are set up right now.
I don't know if I've ever done that one time. I think I'm pretty like incredibly, of course we all deal with it.
Good job. You're holier than I am.
That's right.
A while ago, I also figured out that Twitter's a game. Twitter's a game, and you just score points by making people feel bad. So I played the game a little bit, but opted out to get back to Noster, and it's a lot nicer there. Lots less done.
It reminds me of the book I just wrote, Humility, and how I achieved it. It's easy to use social media for those ends. I think, again, like this, it's amazing how quickly all of these things get back to these existential questions that we don't as a society spend much time thinking about at all. We just have already talked about in 10 minutes, we've talked about what are people, what is speech? It sounds weird because we're not used to thinking about these things, but in reality, so much of just the things that are presented as obvious good or obvious goods or obvious thoughts are the product of a vision of the world, a view of the world, a view of what it means to be human. And yeah, it's just when, you know, it's easy to use words and then smuggle in all kinds of meaning, unspecified meaning, just because you let people's imaginations carry that water.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I think one of the, yeah, go ahead.
I'm not sure I gave the best answer possible about what is speech for. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah.
Like,
no,
what,
honestly,
what is before? What is the definition of speech? Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, you're good. I think one of the things that, as you talk about that question, you try to answer it biblically, there's a few different like core things that the scriptures over and over again say that this is what motivates God. This is why God does what he does and doesn't do what he doesn't do. And so, again, there's certain things, and so everything can fall into those categories. So one of the things, somebody came up to Jesus one time and they asked him, what is the greatest commandment? What's the thing that God wants most? Is effectively what this guy was asking him. And Jesus said, what do you think? And so Jesus, this guy responds and says that to love the Lord, to love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus goes, yeah, you got it. Like that's it. And so speech and people, just like everything else that exists for those two twin purposes. And so you can determine what is or is not in line with what God wants and wants to subsidize and see more of by thinking and comparing whatever the things are against those two goals. And so when I think about speech, again, I think it's important to realize that speech is a scarce resource. We've run out of energy at some point. We can't just talk forever. We run out of ideas at a certain point. You know, we can't just speak endlessly. And so I think that, again, God wants us to use everything for his glory and for the good of our neighbor. So again, it's not just our own. We don't just think about ourselves. What do I want? What benefits me? How can this make me money? How can this benefit my fame, my career, my whatever it is? The goal, one of the things that has to be governing what we do or do not say is thinking about words in a very real sense as if they're a type of currency. It's something that I think God intends us to do is to be, again, stewards of what we say, what we don't say. And we need to think about how we're spending our words. It's easy just to, I can't remember the exact scripture or the exact citation, but it's basically said in the abundance of speech, sin is not absent or something like that. Like the more that you speak,
yeah, yeah.
The more dangerous, the more words that are coming out of your mouth, the more dangerous it is. And the more likely you are to say something that will be sinful or be something that will hurt people, that will not be as beneficial as possible. So I think that whatever else we think about speech and whatever else speech is, it's one of the first things we have to agree about it is that it's a tool and it's designed to be stewarded, which means it's designed to be used certain ways in certain times in certain quantities. I think that would be a helpful, at least initial thought, is thinking about speech.
Yeah. What do you think about the idea of speech being creative and productive? Like, that's how the world began. God spoke and it was.
Yeah.
And that's the original fiat lux, right? That's the phrase in Genesis 1. What kind of creative power does human speech have? Obviously, we're not God. We can't create out of nothing, but
Yeah, 100%. I think this is one of the most fascinating things. Again, we see God and God literally creates with his speech. He says, let there be, and then everything comes into being. It's interesting, and we could go on a whole thing about this, but it's interesting that God does not do that when it comes to people. God, when he creates people, he forms the ground. So I think there's something interesting there. But again, largely God speaks and then reality, creation just leaps to obey him. It says that he says something and then it happened and then God looked at it and called it good. And so I think that that's instructive, is just seeing the way in which God speaks and then reality is created. To a lesser degree, we imitate God by creating it in a different capacity. And I think that one of the things, again, we can't create mountains and rivers and animals with our speech. And yet what we can do is we can vastly affect, for good or for bad, how creatures around us, whether they're human or non-human, like we can affect their existence with our mere words. One of the, I believe this is in the Proverbs, it says, life and death is in the tongue. But we can speak words that encourage, animate people, that encourage them and help them to endure very difficult things. You can do that if you have the right kind of encouragement. Sadly, you can also tear people down and destroy people with very short quantity of words. But so I think, again, taking the same, there's the core principle of one of the ways that we image God is by creating or destroying with our tongue. And I think there's a time to do that. There's a good time to tear down, including tear down with our speech. There's also a lot more times when it's where the task and the mission is to build up with our speech, build up other people, build up. Again, you could praise your animal. You could say, good boy. This is what we're doing when our animal obeys us.
If you play different kinds of music to plants, different kinds of music,
yeah,
help them grow faster and stuff. I think there's a link there between our ability to build up and tear down other people and things and God's ability. And that's Jesus, right? Jesus is God and man. And he did a bunch of miracles. Jesus spoke and he calmed the storm. He healed a bunch of people by speaking or even just laying hands on them. And then he passed that power off to his apostles. So Peter goes out and does the same thing. Does Paul heal anyone? I don't remember. But he definitely does perform some miracles.
Paul's clothing.
Snake, at least.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
People, like, they touch his clothing or whatever and they get healed, yeah.
Yeah, so we have the Holy Spirit. Miracles aren't the kind of thing that happen all the time, by definition. But we have access to that same kind of power. Yeah, so that's like a link between God's creative power of speaking and our, like, kind of more mundane power of speaking.
I think it's also, that's a great point. I think it's also interesting. So God communicates via the written word. Like, God chooses this to be the medium by which he communicates to people, is the written word. He could have communicated, again, God could have just individually appeared to every single person who's ever lived in order to give them proof that he exists and to communicate his exact will for each individual life. And yet he doesn't do that. That's interesting. And it's very interesting. God creates processes where he speaks. He expects the words that he communicates to people to be written down, to be taken seriously, prioritized, and then passed down to future generations. I think that's one thing that's all throughout the Old Testament. God believes in and wants humans to prioritize history. Writing down both things that have happened, things that have been said. There's some things that are got in God's economy that are so important that he wants them, like, these things should last forever. And then at the same time, it's notable, and I think it's instructive too, that there comes to a point where in Jesus, one of the ways that the Bible describes that is that the Word became flesh. It's actually later in John chapter 1. He says the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And so there comes a point where God is not content to communicate in a purely written medium. He says, I want this animating force that created the world. I want him to take on flesh, to take on a human body and demonstrate how I am in ways that can't be communicated with words alone. And this is what Jesus is doing. This is why there's so much tension between the Pharisees and religious leaders who were professional law interpreters, professional God's revelation interpreters, understanders, proclaimers. And you could just see how badly things had gone when the professional Bible interpreters were at complete odds with the Word made flesh. I think that's a really interesting thing. And it's really interesting to see how that kind of can, because one of the dangers with social media is that you get, because it's this disembodied form of communication, it's easy to forget that there's actual people on the other side of these things, and it's just easy to use words as cudgels, like you were talking about, to attack each other with.
Yeah, so that's kind of on the topic of what words are able to do with speeches and what it's for. What kind of limitations are there to speech? I think it's interesting. Speech is used for all these different purposes, both by God and by us. But what can't we do with speech? And, like, in my mind, I divide this into two different kinds of things. You've got, like, material constraints, like you can only shout so far. And then there's like essential, I don't know, like constraints that are related to the purpose of speech potentially, or like the nature of what is happening in speech. But do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think you touched on it. There's physical constraints. Again, you can only yell so far. And again, this is, we think about this as a constraint, or it's tempting to think of constraints as negative, and rather than constraints being something that are designed to be a blessing. Because I think all of us have had points where we've said something that we wish we could take back, or it reached an audience who we didn't intend it to reach. And so I think these, we're looking at these restraints in the context and with in which God gives us speech, I think largely these constraints are designed to be a blessing both to us and to people at large. Again, we talked about this a little bit earlier. There's physical constraints. There come a point where if you just keep talking, you lose your voice. I think wasn't the first time we talked, I think you were in the process of losing your voice. I think it's, again, if we don't acknowledge those restraints, then we can lose the ability. Like, it's really interesting. We lose the ability to have those and to use those gifts. Energy is another one, very similar constraint. I think consequences are another one. This is one of my favorite things is, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I bring up this question because like social media removes a bunch of these constraints, right? Whereas you can only talk to a certain number of people at the same time. Like the Dunbar number is the idea that you can only maintain about 150 relationships at any given time. And social media allows you to broadcast to thousands or millions of people all at the same time. So there are some constraints on speech that are just accidental. They're not really baked into the nature of speech. They can be overcome with technology. You know, another one is distance. So I can't shout further than a block, but I can create a tweet that goes to China. And so is it good that we've overcome these different constraints with social media? That's a super hard question to answer. But I think it shows even working within God's world, God invented electricity and the internet. It was just waiting there for us to discover it. A lot of these constraints we can get over. But then you were just about to talk about like consequences. That seems like a constraint that is essential to the nature of speech.
Yeah. I think, again, this could be a whole conversation in of itself, is the nature of consequences is tied to the idea of sowing and reaping. And this is one of the, in my opinion, one of the most underappreciated aspects of just underappreciated principles upon which the whole universe, everything is based, is this idea of like actions having consequences. I think logic itself is founded on this principle that the Apostle Paul in the book of Galatians says is so foundational and so obvious that to deny it is to mock God. Like, God has created a world where actions have consequences. And so technology just can basically heighten both for good and for bad these consequences. So social media can allow us incredibly to, for example, preach the gospel from here in the United States, zero threat of persecution. I can create a video, upload it to YouTube, and it can reach behind the firewall, get into China, and someone can hear the gospel, believe in Jesus along these lines.
Yeah, like it's a pirate radio kind of thing.
How that can happen. 100%, exactly. At the same time, you can have something like, do you remember the movie that came out a while ago, The Dictator?
No, I don't think I saw that.
So I haven't seen it either, but it's James Franco and I think Seth Rogen. But basically, they did this movie making fun of the leader of North Korea. And like North Korea was on the verge of declaring nuclear war because of this Hollywood movie that got made by this group of 20 people, 30 people. And so again, you just see the negative consequences. Like it's just with great power comes great responsibility. These social media tools can be great amplification tools, both for the good of people and the glory of God and for to the detriment of people. And so again, I think these tools are just amplification mediums for good or for bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Another essential limitation of speech that comes to mind is privacy. Like the Cypherpunk Manifesto is famous for saying that privacy is not secrecy, it's the ability to selectively reveal oneself to the world.
Yes.
And like a biblical example of this is like Matthew 18. If you see someone who's sinning and it needs to be addressed, talk to them first. You're actually supposed to keep sins secret when you first address them. And if he is, you know what, you're totally right, I've been working on this, I will change. But then if he doesn't do that, then you bring one other person to him and it becomes this group kind of confrontation. You're raising the stakes a little bit. And then if that doesn't work, then you bring him before the entire church and you just say, everyone kind of says you need to knock it off. But that's like increasing scopes of privacy. And that is an essential part of communication. You can choose who you share certain information with. But also, like, a corollary to that is that once you've shared your information, you can't take it back anymore. And so I think this is really interesting because it's something that I think current social media and communication technologies are built on a lot of lies, right? They can pretend that reality doesn't work the way it is because they have this closed system that they control. So delete and edit, right? You cannot delete something you said. You cannot edit something that you said to someone else. Once it's out there, it's just like the deed is done. But social media companies kind of lie and say, what, do you regret that? Why don't you just go ahead and pretend that you didn't say that? And that has all kinds of implications. It erodes people's integrity. It allows people to say, you know what, I don't think I should be held accountable for that thing that I said publicly. And then you take it back. But like a decentralized social media and decentralized technology in general, because they don't have that like centralized custodial approach to things, they have to start telling the truth about these things. They have to start telling the truth about how God made the world, about the consequences of speech. And I think that's fascinating.
Yeah, it is. I do think it's fascinating. It comes with different sets of trade-offs. I'll be the first to admit I pay $8 a month to Elon Musk so that I can get that edit.
No.
I can't tell you how many times. Oh, no, dude, I do it. I have to. Because, again, like there's so many times it's not the thing. Fired from the Nostrum.
Yeah, hey, you're gone. I just did this by myself.
So my problem is, it's not that I say things that, like, I'm sure I've deleted a couple because I was like, I said something I shouldn't have said. I think that's maybe happened. I don't even know if that's ever happened. But more than that, what happens is I'll have some sort of a typo or something like that. And so, again, like typos which wouldn't happen necessarily in speech, they come out in different ways. And so I think there's a healthy way that can happen. Another thing that can happen is there can be different levels of miscommunication. There could be something where you said exactly what you wanted to say and someone misinterpreted it. And so they got mad at you as if you were saying some horrible, awful thing when it's just a simple miscommunication where, you know, I've seen friends who would delete tweets subsequent to their just realizing, okay, people are being confused over what I'm meaning by this. And so even then some of these things where they could be easily ironed out. If we were one-on-one with somebody, it could be quickly handled, just quick explanation. Again, so much of the body language is there as well. You're able to get more context. But in the context of social media, it's just so easy for misunderstandings to take place when you have this disembodied medium. So I certainly think there's both, again, we haven't even talked about censorship and all kinds of stuff. I think there's great reasons to have the lack of the ability to delete and edit and all that kind of stuff. And then there's the other side of things.
I don't know if it was you I was talking about this with the other day, but I think it was. You were saying something about how words, some people say that words are not sufficient, but really,
I
think it was someone else I was talking to. Oh, okay. It was you. Cool. Yeah. Like
it
words
was me,
are,
yeah.
Some people think words are not sufficient, but really words are sufficient. We're just bad at putting them together. So here's an idea. So instead of adding a delete button, we add a requirement for when you publish a tweet or something that it has to be in some kind of meter. So like poetry is all about distilling meaning into as few words as possible.
And
if everyone, instead of just tweeting in all lowercase or whatever, had to fit all their thoughts into poetry, maybe that would increase the amount of signal. Or maybe everyone would just be confused all the time. I don't know.
I 100% think that would help. And I think what you're describing is what you're advocating for is more thought going in, like more thought happening before you speak. That's generally a good principle. This is like, you can think about this in the context of, Jesus talks about this in the context of building a tower. He says, which of you starts building without having a defined plan and knowing that you have the resources necessary to finish the plan? And so that same thing that's true over building things in physical world, I think you could also say about saying things. Are you laying out a plan? Are you speaking in a way that you have a well-developed plan of what you want at the end of the day? Or are you just flying off the cuff and just not planning very well what you're going to say and do? And I think a lot of the problems that people find themselves in terms of speech is because they're not thinking about the consequences of how people are thinking. They're not thinking through the consequences of how people could be taking the things that they're saying.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times the undo button in my email has saved me. There's something about hitting that send.
Wait a second.
Like, oh, no. Like, quick, bring it back. Bring it back. And there's a big difference.
Hold on. Hold on here, John. But what about, see, what I'm saying is I pay the $8 for the edit button. I get that extra 30-second window where I can undo. But
that's a scam. That's a scam. Yeah, all you got to do is on Noster is just write some code, and there you have undo. I've thought about this, setting up like different delays for when you send a note. And just say, I want to delay for 30 seconds, and then I can undo for 30 seconds.
Yep.
But you can just go to settings. And this is the power of an open protocol, right? You just go to settings and you say, I want to delay every note I send by 24 hours. And so I'll do my tweets, and then I'll come back tomorrow and review the queue. And maybe I'll delete a couple. And that's not really real deletion. You've just chosen to think about it and not say those things. You're just looking at it in context. Yeah, I'm excited about that idea. I've regretted things plenty of times and deleted things off of Twitter tons of times.
Yes. And so I think that, again, this is, again, some of this is, again, this is just really a lot of background in terms of philosophical ideas of what, like, what should go into speech. And then we can just kind of look at, again, I would say we have a few minutes left here, kind of just talking about the layout or the kind of the world we find ourselves in. We find ourselves in a world where you have these technology companies that are these gatekeepers for who can and cannot speak. There's all kinds of limitations of what you can and cannot say, the consequences of what those will be. There's lots of things where normally the people who decide what can and can't be said are the people more broadly, but this turns unelected individuals into the gatekeepers for what can or cannot be said within a given. Yeah, just within society, that just basically can cut you off from having an account and cut off your ability to communicate with people. And so, again, and this is one of the big things that Noster seeks to deal with. Do you want to expand on that?
Yeah, the stewardship, or maybe not stewardship, but intermediation of people's speech is a huge problem. And we've seen that historically with Twitter. What kind of got me into Noster was the New York Post article on Hunter Biden that was censored by Twitter. And when that happened, it was like right before the election. You just can't do that. And I expected that sort of thing from Facebook, but I did not expect it from Twitter because of the ethos of Twitter. Mm. And that just sent me down the deep dive rabbit hole of trying to figure out decentralized social media, what was out there and all that stuff. Like, some people see Mastodon as an alternative to big tech because it's small and it's federated.
You actually have Mastodon.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Totally. Mastodon is your most popular decentralized social media alternative. So it's not run by a single company. There's a bunch of individual separate servers that individual people run. And so you can choose which one you want to be on. You can run your own if you want. And there you go. You can freely speak. But Mastodon has a whole bunch of problems. But one of them on this topic is just, we're talking about lack of accountability for intermediating speech. The smaller you get, the less accountability there actually is, right? So Mastodon administrators can censor with more impunity than Twitter can. Twitter has everyone like breathing down their neck, trying to make sure that they're being ethical about it. And that's a good thing. Ideally, we wouldn't be on Twitter at all. But given that's the case, it's good to have those safeguards in place. But Mastodon, it's just some server admin decides that he doesn't like what you said, and so he deletes your entire profile or something.
Sure.
So going small is not a solution to that on its own. I don't know if I answered the question you were going for, but...
Yeah, I think it started to. I think one of the things that we're running into, we're gonna have to move this to a part two, because we still got a good number of kind of the foundational principles that we need to unpack to just explain why Christians should care about this. Again, I think just in summary, I think one of the things that we could say is that, again, we talked about just different levels of speech and different levels of things, but and different reasons why speech is important. I think fundamentally as Christians, the most important thing we could say is that the gospel is speech. The gospel, God comes to us and his message is, he sends us a message. It's embodied in the person of Jesus, but he brings us good news. And so part of our responsibility as Christians is to communicate that message to those who haven't heard it yet. And so Christians should care deeply about ensuring that there are avenues and ways that can to continue to communicate that message, which has throughout 2,000 years of church history has been very controversial, very despised, very maligned, and tried to be suppressed by many governments all over the world. And they, despite their best efforts, including coming up against literally the strongest empires in human history, Jesus is still here. His church is bigger than ever. And so Christians should care deeply about working to create mediums that enable that good news to continue to spread across the world. I think the printing press was one example of a decentralizing innovation that enabled that to happen more and more. I think Bitcoin is another such invention that is being used and is going to be able to use even more in the future to that same end. And I think you would agree. Nostr is another one of these. John, I'll give you the last word for this part one and let you run on that for a little bit.
Yeah, man, I think that's a great capstone. Christians are the original cypherpunks. And that's what I'm hoping to do with Nostr. When I first got into it, I was just interested in helping my local church community out with a localized, decentralized social media. But hey, man, if we can do that for the whole world, if we can bring free speech, and like free speech, we'll get into this later, but free speech comes from Christianity. That's an invention of the Christian philosophy. So if we can bring that to the world, awesome. So yeah, thanks, Jordan. This was an awesome conversation. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, thank you, John. Appreciate you. And again, thank you to our listeners. We are grateful for you and look forward to, again, come back in part two. We're going to be unpacking a few more ideas that kind of form the basis for, again, social media and just form the basis for why you should care about social media, why you should care about Nostr in particular, and what the stakes are. So we're going to unpack some more of that in part two. So join us soon to listen to part two. Thank you so much, and thanks for taking part in the Thank God for Nostr podcast.